Welcome to the Peak Work Performance Summit, where we talk about scientifically proven ideas that make us smarter, healthier, and more productive. My name is Ron Friedman, and my guest today is the very talented Dan Rome. Dan is the author of the international bestseller, The Back of the Napkin, Solving Problems and Selling Ideas with Pictures. And he's the founder of an online school called the Napkin Academy, where he teaches people how to solve complex problems through visual thinking. You're about to hear Dan explain why visuals are a vastly underrated tool for communicating with others, and why our brains often process information more quickly when it's presented in visual form. From there, he'll show us some simple, concrete techniques for incorporating visuals into the way we think, the way we problem solve, and the way we deliver presentations. So, without further ado, here's my interview with Dan Rome. Dan Rome, thank you so much for being part of the summit. I really enjoy your work, and I love the idea that we underestimate the value of visuals. So I want to ask you about some of the ideas that you bring up in the back of the napkin. And one of those ideas is that when it comes to communicating with others, whether it's a colleague or a friend, we often overestimate the value of words, and we underestimate the value of visuals. Tell me why you think visuals are so important.
Well, you know, Ron, just to give you kind of a couple of top of mind data points, you know, I've spent a lot of time being a verbal communicator, as all of us have, spent a lot of time back in school learning, you know, first of all, my alphabet and then my spelling and then my vocabulary and then how to write sentences and grammar. And it took years and years of training for us to be as effective verbal communicators as we are. And it's awesome that we did that. But what we completely neglect is the fact that our visual capacity, not only for communication, but also for just plain old thinking and perceiving, is vastly larger than any kind of verbal processing that we have. And to me, what's crazy is the fact that we've come to associate thinking and communication as, you know, 90% a verbal tool and maybe a little bit of gesture. No. The cognitive science is there now. The neurobiology, the data are there. Combining verbal with visual is the most powerful thing that we can do, because so much of our mind is dedicated towards visual processing. And if you'd like me to do a little bit of drawing, I can actually not just talk about this, but I can actually show you what I mean. Ron, yeah. Would you let me sort of take over the screen here for a moment?
Sounds great. I'd love to see if you could show us an example of a complex idea that perhaps you can make not only more simple, but also more appealing through visuals.
Oh, absolutely. I've got many of them. Let me go ahead and do this. I'm going to try to take over the screen, okay? And then I'm going to switch over to a little drawing tablet that I have right here. And you tell me if you can see my screen. Can you see my screen all right?
Yes.
Looks all right. And in the middle of it, you should see a little smiley face appearing. And that's me. Do you see that?
Yes.
And I'm going to talk about the power of pictures. Okay? So why visuals? The kind of the question you just started off. Well, let's do a real simple little data draw here for a moment. So if this circle represents our brain, and we were to split that in half, just as if this were a kind of a pie chart, if we filled in just slightly less than half of that, that is the amount of neurons that we have in our brain that in one way or another are there to process visual information. And here's another kind of an interesting data point. If you think about just a standard person, so here's just a person standing there, and you think about the various organs that we've got in our body, whether it's our heart or our stomach or our liver or our kidneys or our brain, you know, not to get too gruesome about it, if you think about all the organs in our body, the one that consumes vastly more energy than any other is, in fact, our brain. So if I have the numbers right, I think our brain is something like 3% of our total body weight, something like that, but consumes about 20% of the total energy that our body consumes, goes to our brain. So, Ron, I hope you're getting these data points. If we put these two together, our brain is really, by any energy measure, the most important organ in our body. It is consuming more energy than anything else. And more of our brain is dedicated to processing visuals than anything else. It kind of begs the question, why would we not use visuals to help us think and communicate? Because that is, in fact, what our brain is doing. We are more visual by virtue of being human beings. We are essentially, you know, 99.3% of us, whatever the data are, we are, by virtue of being human, essentially walking, talking, visual processing machines. And what I've tried to do is capitalize on that. And I found that it's a good thing to do because you can be very successful in problem solving and communicating.
Mm-hmm. And if you think about this from an evolutionary perspective, in fact, we started out with cave drawings, right? Before we started having writing down texts, and it was almost the most natural way of communicating with one another.
Well, it's funny, Ron, that you should say that, because I'm actually working on a new book right now. And one of the things that I talk about is the origins of drawing, and in fact, the origins of communication. And I really like what you just said. So if we think about those gorgeous cave drawings, you know, where maybe you see this beautiful bull in the caves of Lascaux or the caves of Chauvet. Caves of Chauvet are the oldest caves that have been found so far. They're carbon dated at 32,000 years old. And what's really interesting is those are the very first drawings that we have ever seen. In fact, in many ways, drawing is humanity's very first technology of any sort whatsoever, because these drawings predate by 20,000 years plus 25,000 years, any form of written communication. It was all pictorial. So yeah, we are hard-coded. We are wired. We all have what I call a visual gene. It is in us in the same way that we have genes for a whole lot of other things. We are visual and have always been.
Yeah. I can tell you from my experience that I tend not to want to draw things for people, in part because I don't feel like I'm a particularly good artist. So do you have any tips for people who feel like, you know, they like this idea of incorporating visuals, but they don't want to reveal themselves to be incompetent when it comes to drawing?
Yeah, well, there's a lot to that. So one of the ways we might talk about it is just basically how to draw, because you are right. Now, if I was to schematically represent this, so here's myself in a room full of people, and I'm there to talk about using drawings to be more effective as a business person. Guaranteed, if this is me here, and I'm, you know, happily talking about the pictures, this person over here, this one person right here, is madly nodding and saying, yes, 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 I got it. And this person is saying, I love the idea, but I can't draw. I love the idea, but I can't draw. I love the idea that I can't draw. And this person's saying, hey, Dan, I just hate your idea at all. You know, visuals, that's stupid. That's oversimplifying. So I'm going to get rid of that person. I don't really care because I happen to know that I'm right. So what's interesting is out of this, what we find is probably about 75% of all the business people that I work with agree with you, Ron, to say, I'm not visual because I can't draw. And I think, Ron, you hit on a really subtle point. It's not so much I can't draw. It may be better to say I am afraid to draw because I seriously doubt my competence or my confidence. And I'm really afraid of kind of making myself, you know, into some sort of dunce-like fool as I try to go up in front of people and draw out something that's just terrible. Well, I think there's sort of two answers to this. The first one is it is possible for anyone to learn how to draw, and it takes about 3 minutes to do it. The second part of the answer is I like to decouple the idea of drawing from art. We are not talking about an artistic process here. Nobody cares if your drawings are beautiful when what we are actually doing is thinking. To me, drawing is simply thinking made clear and in a way that is not possible to do with words, because words, by definition, are a wonderful way of communicate, but they are linear. That is, if I'm going to tell you a story, I have to start here and work my way through. And, you know, more words, more words, more words, more words, more words. And maybe some of these words link back to things that were in here. And then maybe I forget my path. And so I sort of jump back to here. The point is, for us to understand effectively what someone is saying to us, we have to pay an extraordinary amount of attention to listening to the entire thing from beginning to end. And think about the amount of mental capacity that we're burning up just trying to remember, where did this story begin by the time we get to the end? Now, one of the reasons, let me go back. One of the reasons that I really love the visual is because we don't have to burn our cognitive cycles on remembering, because a picture enables us to see everything at the same time. There it is. It's right in front of me. And so what I can do is I can really activate, you know, that 48% of my mind that's visual, or to really use these visuals to remember what it is that's gone on and to actually see what you're talking about. So I'm only obliquely answering your question, but I think I should take a breath and take a little pause. Does this make sense, what I'm saying so far?
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, I really like your point about how what we're doing is we're freeing up the mental requirements of our audience so that they can pay attention to what we're actually talking about at the moment and be present rather than thinking about what we talked about 2 or 3 minutes ago. And in other words, we don't have to capture as much information in our minds and have it accessible. Rather, we can just pay attention to the moment in which you are speaking right now.
That is correct. And not only the moment that I'm speaking in right now, but because I have this picture, I can actually immediately remember and discern everything that you've said, or at least the high level of everything that you've said, over the entire duration of the period that you've been telling me this story, because now there is a picture of it. And my mind is very, very good at combining words with pictures. And each time I look at one of these pictures, it triggers me to remember what were the words that you did say at that point. And so I actually not only have the ability to be more present on what you're saying right now, I actually, because most of our memories are in fact stored as visuals, vastly more than are stored as words. And we can talk about some of the data on that later. But what I've actually done by creating a visual or having you show me a visual is that I also am able to keep track of your entire idea as you go through it, because I'm actually seeing it unfold in front of me. I am literally seeing it unfold in front of me.
You've done this for a long period of time. If I give you a set of words, you'll figure out pretty quickly how to represent them visually. But for the person who hasn't had a lot of experience with this type of communication, do you recommend that he or she think about what visuals they're going to draw during their presentation, or do you recommend just going out and trying to do it on the spot?
Oh gosh, no. Like everything. I'm going to go to a blank page here for a moment. I've got some things that we're going to come back to, but let me just get a kind of a blank page. Let's be real for a moment and think about verbal communication one more time. It took us years and years and years to become competent at being good verbal communicators. You know, when we were a little tiny baby, you know, our first words were not very good. Our first communication was not very good. And then again, we had to go through basically, you know, nine or 10 years of learning the basic tools of verbal communication until, you know, we're sophisticated grownups and we now have the ability to, you know, write a dissertation or give a speech. You know, there's a tremendous amount of training and practice more than anything else that went on in that. So when you're asking, can people just start to make visuals spontaneously? Of course, the answer is no. There is practice that's required too. The good news is it's a lot less practice than what's required to do those, to do all that verbal communication. So this is a long-winded way of saying, I've come up with what I consider to be kind of an interesting little tool that I call something, I call it the 6x6 rule. And what it tells us is that if there's a problem out there in front of us or an idea that we're working our way through and it's a little vague right now or it's lots of pieces and we're trying to pull it together into one nice kind of complete little box and be able to put a bow on it and say, you know, there, I've got it. That is my idea right there. This process is really tricky. You know, it's really complicated. How do I take complexity and turn it into simplicity? Well, one of the ways I've found to do it is if we use our visual mind and we know a little bit about visual science, how does vision actually work? It turns out that the way our visual mind divides up the world is there are really kind of 6 different visual work streams that our visual mind goes through. And I'm talking about this from really a neurobiological perspective. How do we actually see the world? And what's interesting is the visual pathways, the 6 visual pathways have interesting names. One of them is called the what pathway. One of them is called the how much. One of them is called the where. And these are the actual visual pathways. One's called the when, another one's the how, and sort of the top of the heap or the end of the circle is the why. Now, what this tells us is that if we're looking at this problem, if we can pull out of there the sort of the who's and the what's, who are the people that make up this problem? And sort of what are the pieces that make it up? Well, there's one of these, and there's one of these. What I've done is I've simply activated my first visual pathway. And the simple little pictures I drew were some little smiley faces and stick figures. And then I say, well, the next part of the problem to take out is the how much part. So can I pull out of my problem some data, some measurements, and some quantities? And then the pictures that I draw to represent that are going to be some charts, a bar chart, or a pie chart, or a kind of a time series chart. Those are pictures too. And then I move on to the next one, which is the where. So that is, can I pull out of my problem, what is the overlap between the different pieces that I've already identified? And then what I do is I draw a little map, a kind of a 2x2, if you will, that shows, well, according to some different criteria, here's where some of the pieces are located, and here's where others are located, and here's where others are located. Ron, without at a risk of going into too much detail, what I'm trying to share is that there is a simple methodological process that enables us to use our visual mind to turn any problem or idea, no matter how complex, into a set of a limited number of very basic little pictures, usually between 5 and 6 pictures that are as simple as a stick figure, a little chart of some kind, a little map, a little timeline, a little flow chart, and then what I call something like a little visual equation, a little visual summary. And by the act of doing that, what I will find is not only have I clarified what this problem was about, but I've done it visually, and it took me not a whole long time, and now I've got a tremendous set of simple pictures that I can use to explain it to anybody else.
So what you're saying is that there's really kind of a formula where you figure out what you want to, what it is you want to say during your presentation, and then look for those six key ideas, the what, why, where, when, and two others that I'm forgetting. But the idea is that once you have those triggers to look for, then you know, here are some things that I can represent visually.
That is right. And I love the way you put it. It is a formula. And this is the thing, this goes back to your earlier question about not wanting to embarrass yourself. Let me skip back here a little bit. Not wanting to embarrass yourself and look like a fool by drawing a terrible picture. The drawing we're talking about is not art. The drawing we're talking about is thinking. That thinking is enabled by a process. I really like your word, which is a formula. This formula is derived from the actual neurobiology, neuromechanical process of vision. This isn't something that I just go and make up. What's really interesting is, again, the formula is derived from how your eyes and visual mind are looking at the world already. And all we're doing is capturing it in the process and locking it down. And so the idea is, Ron, at the risk of going too much into theory, I want to just pursue this just for a moment, because to me, this is really the magic of kind of adding a visual into all of our thinking and all of our communicating.
You know, I think it's it really is quite fascinating, and it can be a useful tool, and one that seems like it's you can pick up on it rather quickly once you understand what the formula is. Now, you also talk in your books about this idea that visuals aren't just something that not just a tool that we can use in order to communicate more effectively, but it can actually help us solve problems more creatively. And I'm wondering if we can dig into that a little bit. How can drawing a visual help me solve a problem?
Okay, I love it. So a problem. Let's visually represent a problem, kind of as we did before, this big cloud. And, you know, maybe, and this could be a problem that has to do with finance. This is a problem that could have to do with marketing. This could have to do with customer segmentation. This could be a problem about personalities, an HR-related problem. This could be a problem about project management. It doesn't really matter. We've got a problem in front of us. It could be a problem of simply trying to clarify something that's insanely complex. So this is the problem. And what we typically do, or what we've been taught to do, is, okay, let's write our way through this problem. And so what we do is we create a kind of an outline. And we say, well, I'm going to have a problem statement, and then I'm going to have an A and a B and a C and a D and maybe an A1 and a B1 and a B2. And these are going to be pieces that I've pulled out of this problem in an outline form. And that's kind of old school. And what we've done more recently is through this thing that we call brainstorming. We say, hey, I know, let's take a whole bunch of post-it notes And let's look at this problem and just pull out a whole bunch of different pieces that we see and label these post-it notes. So kind of rapid fire, you know, brainstorming with really fast capture. And then what we do is we take those post-it notes and we categorize them and we put them into some sort of an order. And then we maybe swap them around. And eventually from those, we still lock ourselves into some kind of an outline that says, well, regardless of whether I went straight from the problem into this sort of linear outline or whether I went through this sort of clarification of craziness through my post-it approach, I still force everything into this kind of verbal narrative that really is, you know, once upon a time, and then they lived happily ever after, and a bunch of stuff happens in here. And that, in theory, my idea, well, not in theory, my idea is buried in there. Great. Wonderful process. Really useful. Imagine now we added a new possibility in here, which was instead of relying only on words, we went back to that kind of 6x6 little pizza thing that I drew a moment ago, and we said, let's introduce the idea of pictures into this mix. So instead of just trying to capture this linear progression of words, what would happen if I actually made more of a kind of a map? Or maybe, you know, as Tony Buzan, who's really big onto mind maps, says, what would happen if I had a central idea and then there were lots of other ideas that were coming off of that? And then rather than trying to force myself into some sort of linear mode, which for most people is really hard to do, it's not a very natural process. Instead, I made these kind of mind maps where I was looking for connections and capturing as I went. This, to me, is a much more powerful way to go. A mind map, and then instead of just writing down what these things are, we actually provide little iconographic representations of the things that we're talking about. And what happens now is we really start to activate our mind's eye, and we're able to say, well, these are the connections and these are the pieces. And guaranteed, to answer your question specifically, the act of adding the visual, I guarantee 100% some new attribute, some new thing that we did not think about when we were writing it is going to appear, because vision is that powerful. So, does that make any sense?
Yeah. And to build off that idea, so can you give me an example of a problem that you were trying to solve recently in your own life that turning it into a visual enabled you to see something that you perhaps missing?
Yes, absolutely. So there is a real world problem that I face, and in fact, probably most people in business face right now, who are trying to do any sort of communication or marketing online. And the issue is this. We've got this rise of social media, of course. So the big social media, you know, which is essentially just this incredible, you know, global network. We now have the ability to share any idea we have with anybody almost instantaneously. And there's all these tools out there, whether it's Twitter or whether it's Facebook or whether it's LinkedIn or Instagram or Pinterest or whatever it is. So, Ron, let me be clear. The problem I face is what should be, here's Dan, very perplexed and a little upset because there's so much stuff going on. Dan is thinking, what should be my social media strategy? Where should I focus? Am I a Twitter person? Should I be looking at Facebook? Should I be looking at LinkedIn? Every one of these things, as you know, is a kind of a beast. Once you start a Facebook page, you have to keep feeding it. Once you start a Twitter feed, you have to keep feeding it. Once you get LinkedIn, you got to keep feeding it. My goodness, even old school. Once you started a blog only works if you just keep feeding it. And Ron, as you're doing your, you know, your video series, your online summit, that's another possibility. And as you know, you need to keep feeding that thing. So the question is, we're all fairly time limited. You know, we can't do every one of these. So the problem was, what should be my social media? And I called a friend of mine, a woman named Ekaterina Walter, and she's really a leading thinker in social media. She's written a series of books on it. And we worked it through visually, and I want to show you what we drew. So I had Ekaterina on the phone, and these were the notes that I was taking, similar to the way I've been kind of drawing as we're talking. As Ekaterina and I were talking, I was capturing my thinking and what she was saying on a piece of paper. So this is just a sheet of paper in my notebook. And so the problem ended up being solved as this. She said, here's what Dan, I based on who you are and what you do, let's think about it as following. The heart of everything you're going to do is going to be your blog. because that's where you're going to put your big stuff. And, you know, Ron, like you, I'm an author. So I like to think that I'm reasonably good at coming up with big ideas. I've got a lot of big stuff that I want to share. So the idea was make the blog the heart of all of that, because the blog is a really great place. It's a good forcing mechanism to capture our own thinking about the big stuff. And then, because I already have a good Twitter following, make Twitter a way to constantly be promoting my sort of smaller visuals. So every time I make a drawing, put it on Twitter. Every time I come up with an idea or there's a visual outcome from one of my blogs, throw that on Twitter and let Twitter just become a kind of a constant machine that's driving people back towards my blog. Then SlideShare, which many people may know of, it's a really good platform online. It's a part of LinkedIn now. And SlideShare is a way you can actually create presentations. So PowerPoint-like blog entries. And I have a lot of followers on SlideShare because I like to think in presentation mode. And so SlideShare is going to be my number three part. So I'm going to put effort into maintaining SlideShare. So every time I do a blog, I'll do a SlideShare about it. And that the recommendation was if I focus on my blog, I continue to drive traffic to my blog by being active on Twitter and offering lots of good stuff to my Twitter followers. And then a lot of that stuff gets captured in a more substantial way on SlideShare. This is going to be the basis of my social media plan. And then eventually I'll start to move into pushing a little bit further on Facebook. And I will do that by, you know, consolidating down to one personal page, kill all these other pages that I have out there, and build a great cover page. So I hope this helps.
Yeah, I really appreciate you sharing that visual. I think it really helps. I mean, one of the things I noticed while looking at it is that it's very easy to digest when you go back to re-exploring an idea or a discussion or conversation that you had, rather than having to read through chronologically. It's all available to you almost instantly. I mean, almost within 2 or 3 seconds, I got what you were talking about.
Exactly. And I think, Ron, I just want to pursue this. We've touched on it a little bit, but this is a critical, critical item to keep in mind. I love verbal communication. I love reading and I love writing. But verbal communication has a problem that it must be linear. It has to be. A book starts here. This is page 10. This is page 20, and so on until you get to the end. It is linear. It has to be. A picture is not. A picture is spatial. A picture exists in all time right in front of me. There's nothing linear about it. So instant recall, all I need to do is look at this picture that I took while I was talking to Ekaterina. And everything that was important is right there in front of me. And my visual mind, which is very fast, can dance around this page and say, what were the important pieces? Oh, this, as opposed to trying to read through. This is the summary of a 30-minute conversation. Mm-hmm. Had I written down the notes of the 30-minute, had I recorded it, imagine if I just done, let's go old school, a cassette recording. Imagine if I just recorded the conversation and then I sit there and have to listen to it again. I don't have 30 minutes. I'm not going to go through it again. What's going to happen, and this is the limitation of verbal communication, is I always just pick the couple of bits that I really loved. And those are the only ones I'm going to remember anyway. At least with the picture, I've got access to the entire conversation.
It's a great example. Now, you know, I would absolutely love an app that took my transcripts of my conversations and turned them into a Dan Rome image, but I don't have that app. So let me ask you this.
Oh, Ron, you do. You do have that app. Yeah, it's called Your Visual Mind. And
that's an expensive app.
It is. Remember, it consumes 20% of our energy on a daily basis. So, but here's the thing. I interrupted you, but I'm just going to run with this for 1 second. Sure. You earlier asked me the critical question, what if my drawings look terrible? Ron, look at this drawing. This is not beautiful, is it? I mean, yeah, I know how to draw stick figures really well, but it's still just a stick figure. It's really a matter of practice. And the little drawings, you know, I don't see any beautiful renderings here. It's really more the idea of just capturing pieces as kind of the visual elements of a big, glorious mind map. And then using that as a recording mechanism.
Is it then, do you then recommend, if we're interested in developing this skill, do we just go into our next meeting and commit to drawing a visual? Or is there a way of doing that with some kind of safety net? I mean, how do you do this in a way that doesn't get you into trouble in the short term?
Okay. Well, you know, when I wrote this book called The Back of the Napkin, it's already, 7 years ago now. The idea is solving problems and selling ideas with pictures. Great. A lot of people said that means that you can solve any problem instantly with a picture. And I said, that's crazy. All that the pictures do is they help us to clarify things really quickly so that we can put all of our thinking engine into really good use. And there is a process to it. So I would not recommend that someone go into a very scary, very, very important meeting and without ever having used pictures or visually thought this, start trying to draw stick figures. It's going to go really bad. It's going to be a disaster. It's a question of practice. It's really a question of focus and practice. If you believe that the visual, which I do, has some potential to help clarify complexity and make it interesting to look at and share ideas, then you owe it to yourself to practice. And then the question will practice what? So I need, I need a tool. The back of the napkin, and this is not self-promotion. This is just what it is. The back of the napkin is simply a visual toolkit. Mm-hmm. That is to say, it gives you the 6x6 tool that we talked about and some other very rapid fire thinking tools that say, if I wanted to be more visual, here are the tools to do it. Here are the frameworks to do it. And here's how to practice. And this over time, and it doesn't have to be a lot of time. Some people pick it up in a couple of days. Some people, maybe it takes longer. It's the practice that then eventually gets us to the point where we feel really confident to stand in front of a room of people. And in a way, as I'm doing right now, just we're doing it remotely, say, look, here's my idea. And I'm going to very quickly map out for you what it's about. Now, keep in mind, Ron, do you think this is the first time I've drawn any of these pictures?
Right.
No, lots of practice.
And so maybe the practice for folks can happen after the meeting. So in other words, you have that 60-minute meeting, you have your notes, and then you take 5 minutes. If you're committed to actually developing this skill, you take 5 minutes and you try to, maybe it's not 5 minutes, maybe more realistically it's 20 minutes, and mm-hmm. you try to summarize what you've taken away from that meeting in a visual. And then the more you do that, the easier it becomes. Now, do I have that right? I mean, is that what you would recommend as a starting point?
Oh, absolutely. I would do that. And that it's interesting because we've been talking a lot about meetings mm-hmm. and meetings are clearly a point where things are very important because decisions are made and lots of unspoken energy and transactions take place in a meeting. Am I impressive or do I come across well? Do I come across poorly? Meetings are a loaded environment. I don't think a meeting live in the meeting is not a great time to practice anything. Other than good listening and just being a good sort of meeting citizen. But it is before and after the meeting where I think the real power comes in. And I'm actually going to add a new page here.
By the way, Dan, before you draw your next image, I'm just curious about the logistics of this. So, for example, if I'm interested in developing the skills, what do I need other than a notebook and a pen if I want to do this on a computer?
So let's talk about two things right now. The first one is, what's the best way to practice becoming more visual? And I think a meeting, and let's just schematically represent a meeting, something like this. There's a meeting. There's something that always takes place before a meeting, hopefully, which is called thinking. You know, there has to be some reason why this meeting is going to happen. There has to be some kind of an agenda or some kind of an objective or something to present or something to share. So long before the meeting, there's some thinking that needs to take place. This is actually where I advocate we start using the visuals. I know that a meeting is coming up next week. All right, let's say this is next week. And I know that that meeting is going to be a project management review of our software development, or it doesn't matter. It could be an HR review. It could be a quarterly financial meeting. It doesn't matter. We know that we've got the meeting coming up and that meeting has an agenda and objective behind it. Now, if it is my meeting, hopefully I'm thinking a lot about what do I want to get out of that meeting and how would I prepare it? This is where I start to say, well, what is my idea really about? What is it that I really want to share with people, understanding that no matter how eloquent a speaker I am, people are only going to remember three things out of this meeting anyway. So in advance, why don't I just identify what are the big three things I want people to remember? And then using my visual practice, I come up with what might be the ideal picture to help people remember those three things. And maybe one of the pictures is going to be a little schematic diagram that shows here is our new customer segment. One of those pictures is going to be a chart that talks about some incredible trend that's going on that we really need to take advantage of. And one of those pictures is going to be a little timeline, sort of a project plan that says, I recommend in order to take advantage of this trend within this customer segment, we do the following, you know, three steps. So what I do before the meeting is I think visually and I draw my pictures. Then when I go into the meeting, I either bring the pictures with me or, even more impressive, I practice drawing them so that when the meeting takes place, I get up there on stage or in front or at the table or at the whiteboard or on my computer, which let's make a little asterisk. I'll explain to you how to do that in just a second. Let's remember the computer, how to draw on a computer. Little side note over there. So then what I do is I've already rehearsed these three things. I've already got the agenda for my meeting. At the right time, I either draw the picture or, you know, if I don't have that confidence yet, I simply show the picture. And it's amazing what's going to happen. If I make my meeting visually focused, no one's going to leave the meeting because everybody else in the meeting loves to look at pictures too. Everybody else in the meeting hates to listen to really long narratives. That's why we hate meetings so much. Their meetings are disasters the way we do them now. But if there are pictures that represent every key point in the meeting, people will stay in that meeting a really, really long time. And then after the meeting, yes, I think it's also effective to say of all the things that I heard, what decisions did we make? Are there another corresponding series of pictures that I might be able to create? The customers are unhappy. The product is tanking. Our timeline is a disaster. These are the things that are going to help me remember. So for the next time I go around, I know what to start with.
I think another interesting point that you raised here that I hadn't thought of before we got on this video call is that, you know, a lot of times when we think about how do I create visuals for this meeting, we start looking for images online and putting them into our PowerPoint. But here's a way of kind of creating your own images in a way that isn't all that time consuming and can actually make you more effective as a speaker because now you're engaging people on a whole new level.
That's exactly right. Yeah. Yeah. And so I often recommend to people that, look, again, just to come back to Ron, what we're doing on this little meeting right now, our call, is I'm drawing live for you. And my drawings are not beautiful. I have a lot of practice drawing fast, so I've got an advantage over most people. But the critical issue I'd like to share is that I'm pretty sure, I'm guessing, Ron, that you're understanding what I'm saying pretty well. Would that be true?
It'd be true.
And I think a vast part of the reason for that is because I'm visually capturing it. I'm doing this thing we talked about earlier. I am talking and I'm drawing at the same time. And it's not like walking and chewing gum. It's not a hard thing to do with practice. And in fact, what's really remarkable is if we let ourselves draw while we talk, at first it's going to be a little bit rough, but it won't be long before we find that we actually talk better when we're drawing, because it gives us an area of focus. It helps us to focus our own thinking, and all kinds of great stuff happen, and people, you know, will get it. So,
Dan, I know you need to go. Let me just ask you one last thing to clarify that point on drawing on a computer. What tools should we look for?
Okay, so you're not going to probably believe this, Ron, but I'm just simply using PowerPoint.
With a mouse?
Little PowerPoint. No, I'm using a pen. So what I've actually got, up until 3 months ago, I had a tablet PC. So here's my tablet PC. It simply meant that it had a touch screen and I used a pen. I got a stylus. So, you know, you could have an iPad. You could have even your iPhone or your Samsung Galaxy. Anything that enables drawing is a great way to draw. But what I love the most is I actually just use the software in PowerPoint. In fact, that's what we're using right now. Let me prove it to you. People might find this interesting. The PowerPoint, you're still able to see my screen, right?
Yes.
So here's the PowerPoint that I built in advance of this screen. I built a bunch of blank pages with some headlines on them, anticipating what might be some of the things that we would talk about. I pre-populated one or two of the pages with a drawing that I thought might be interesting. But everything that you see here in red is just the drawing that I've been doing while we're talking, which begs the question, how do you draw in PowerPoint? Because there aren't any drawing tools in PowerPoint. Well, there are. It's just tricky the way you find them. So what you do is you go into presentation mode, which I've just done. And down here, I've got a new version of PowerPoint, but this is true in all previous versions as well. One of the tools that appears here in the lower left that nobody ever looked at, but it's been there all along, is a pen. And if you just select the pen, I'm using my stylus right now, but my goodness, I could be using my finger. If I was on a desktop machine, I could be using my mouse. I just select that pen and I start drawing. Mm-hmm. And look at that. Holy smoke. It's live drawing captured. And then the beauty of it is that when I leave my presentation, I say end the show. It says, do you want to keep your ink notations? You say keep. And now everything that we've drawn over the last 40 minutes is still saved.
Well, Dan, thank you very much. I really enjoyed it. I think for me, I mean, I feel like I got a lot out of this. And if folks are interested, how can they learn more about your work? And perhaps is there some method of that you would recommend that they use to try and get more familiar with some of these tools?
Well, sure. So obviously, one simple answer is go ahead and buy a book. You know, the back of the napkin book or my more recent book, it's called Show and Tell. Chapter 4, I believe it is, in Show and Tell, has got an entire very quick summary on how do you get really up to speed on doing all the visuals we've been talking about. Ron, the best way is to go to something I call the Napkin Academy. It is my online visual thinking training site, inspired, of course, by Salman Khan and the Khan Academy. The idea is if he can teach people math using online tools, I can teach people to draw using online tools. I encourage everyone to go look at the napkinacademy.com. There are free videos there. It is a paid service, but there are a number of free videos there so you can watch and see if it makes any sense.